Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here with you. We're in the middle of May, recording this on Sunday, May 18th. The Guardians have just finished off a terrible weekend, so I don't want to talk about real baseball at all.
You're telling
me. I've had a fun fantasy weekend, so I'm happy to talk about that. So at least we'll have some positive stuff to discuss. We have a new City Connect jersey for the Red Sox. We could talk about that. What'd you think of the new, what is it, like the Ode to the Green Monster or something like that, right?
Yeah, I honestly kind of like it. The vibe I've gotten from at least my friends that are Red Sox fans is that people don't really like them, but I think the Red Sox are two for two in the City Connect jerseys. They just don't play that well in these. They played great in the last ones. They're not playing well in these.
I think the interesting thing, yeah, that's true. The interesting thing with the City Connect stuff to me is like when the Red Sox new ones came out, a bunch of people who aren't Boston fans were like, I really like these. They're really clean. They're cool looking. And yeah, what I've heard from Boston fans is like, I like them, but like, you know, City Connect, the thing in the city they're connecting with is themselves. Like, is that what we're getting here? Whereas the last round with the Red Sox, there were a bunch of people I felt like outside of Boston were like, oh yeah, yellow and blue, exactly what I think about with the Red Sox. And a bunch of people who are from Boston who are like, these are great. They actually connect with the city. They actually mean something. And it's, I sort of like, to me, that's what the City Connect jersey should do. And so like, I don't actually care. Like if you polled baseball fans and 90% of fans outside of a city are like, no, those are ugly. And 90% of the fans in the city are like, yeah, this is a thing that matters to us as a city. Like that's what should matter. And I feel like they nailed that with the first one. And with the second one, I think they did a better job with the look of the jersey, but maybe not as good a job with the meaning behind the jersey.
They connected with their left field wall.
Yeah, it's just that, and I do think that it is a little weird that it's like, you know, what's the most Boston thing we connect with? Okay, the marathon. Great, I like that. Okay, this time though, the most Boston thing we connect with is ourselves. We are the most Boston thing there is, and like they could have even tied it to the Celtics in some way, like more of like a cross sport green, but like, even that doesn't really work.
Talk about that right now.
Fair enough. Well, as a Cavs fan, neither of us want to talk basketball, so but anyways, we're not going to talk about jerseys too much longer. That's a different podcast. I guess we could do a podcast on jerseys someday, but we are going to talk about jersey numbers though, because we always do that. This is episode 168, so we're looking at jersey number 68. And I mean, this might be the worst jersey in baseball history. I don't know. We'll have to see what we get in the next, you know, 31 weeks.
Well, but Ross Stripling just announced his retirement, and you know, maybe he's 68, and George Kirby's very good. So I'd say either, you know what, and Jordan Romano is all of a sudden, after I cut him everywhere, I drafted him in like 20 leagues and I've cut him in 20 leagues, he's now looking like a really good closer with Jose Alvarado suspended. Yeah. So Romano, Stripling, or who else did I say there?
Kirby.
Kirby. Those are decent options for how bad this is.
I think Kirby has to be it. I mean, I'm looking at like, so by our war, there's a handful of guys who wore it once. You know, Josh Reddick, actually, the best player by our war to ever wear this jersey number is Josh Reddick, who wore it for one season with the Red Sox. The best player to wear it for more than one season is Dellin Betances, who wore it for 9 with 11.1 our war. And then you get down to basically Romano and Kirby, who are right around Romano at 7.2, Kirby at 7.1. I'm pretty confident saying that Kirby will pass Romano by the end of the year. Romano's having a good, like, he's turned it around, but like, you know, closers don't pile up the war. And I love George Kirby, so I would give it to Kirby.
Yeah, that's fair. I like it.
Yeah.
I'm good with Kirby.
Hopefully he's back soon. It's the other thing that I noticed when I looked at it, I was like, well, he only wore it for 3 years, but that's because this is his fourth season and he hasn't pitched in it yet. So hopefully he'll get that fourth season kicked off soon. He's been making rehab starts, so he should be back.
Yeah, he's on his way.
any day, which I badly need on multiple teams. So I hope it happens. Let's jump into our head-to-head heroes. And I've got a couple different choices here, so I'm gonna let you go first, and then I'll make a decision while you're deciding, while you're announcing yours.
I think this might be the first time ever that I'm gonna go with a pitcher. But the reason why that is because we usually record, folks, just so you know, we usually record on like Saturday, or if we record on a Sunday, it's usually in the morning, but we're now recording on Sunday evening, and so starting pitchers have had a chance to have two starts, which is very rarely the case when we record. And that's why I almost always go with a hitter. But my man, now look, I'm not saying this is going to continue. I sure as hell hope it does. But my man, Merrill Kelly, is on an absolute bender right now. He is on fire. He had two starts this week, one at San Francisco. He went 7 innings, 8 hits, 1 earned, 0 walks, 8 strikeouts. And then against like one of the worst teams to ever walk the planet, the Rockies, not at Coors. The Rockies were on the road. Merrill Kelly did them dirty, man. 7 innings, 1 hit, 0 earned, 3 walks, 11 strikeouts. So Kelly started this year terribly. He had a 9 earned run game against the Torpedo Bat Yankees. But really since then, he's been a quality start, just ERA machine. The 3 walks were kind of weird today, but I think his stuff was playing up so much that he was clearly going for strikeouts, and that's how he ended up with 11 strikeouts. So 2 wins, 14 innings, 1 earned, 19 strikeouts. Like, this was an ace week from Merrill Kelly. So I don't know if it's going to continue. He's got a long track record of being perfectly mediocre. So I'm not saying it's going to get a lot worse. I just don't think I would expect this to continue, but he is definitely a head-to-head hero of the week.
Yeah, there have actually been, like, if you had some two-start guys this week, like, Zach Wheeler had 2 starts and was awesome in both of them. Ronel Blanco had 2 starts. They were great. Andrew Abbott had 2 starts and only gave up 1 run between the two of them over 11 innings. Tyler Molly had 2 starts, 12 and a third innings. I think he gave up 2 runs. He just didn't strike anyone out, which is a little weird. You already mentioned Kelly. Chris Sale had 2 starts. And had a 2.13 ERA over those 2 starts, which makes him easily the worst of the pitchers we just talked about, which is just crazy. It's been an impressive week for 2-start guys. We'll ignore that, like, there were some other 2-start guys who weren't good, but the good ones were really good. I like the Kelly pick. I went with a bat, and I am also taking advantage of the fact that we're recording on Sunday, because Will Benson hit another 2 home runs today, which takes Will Benson up to 5 home runs this week. Jesus. Now, Will Benson is like, we've been through this with Will Benson before, right? He goes on these hot streaks, and he put up a 369 WOBA in 2023. He's doing the same thing he does when he goes on these hot streaks, though. It's a high BABIP. It's a lot of strikeouts. It's a super high home run per fly ball rate. Now he is barreling and hitting the ball, hard hitting. Is that the way we say it? I guess his hard hit rate and his barrel rate are, like, even by his standards, and he's been good in those categories, even by his standards, they are sky high. He has a 52.9% hard hit rate and a 23.5% barrel rate. Now, he has, and that was going into the game today. Those numbers probably went up with the 2 home runs he hit today. He also, by the way, he had 2 home runs and a single and 3 RBIs and 2 runs scored in 4 plate appearances. It brought his strikeout rate on the year down to 27.3%. Now, he has only had 33 plate appearances. So this is like, you know, he's just back up. It's way too early to be like, oh, he's improving on this, he's improving on that. But like, his strikeout rate year by year coming into the season, 31.1, 31.3, 39.7 last year. It's down to 27.3 this year. But even the year that he was at 31.3, he was able to have a good season. And it relied on a high BABIP. It relied on him getting a lot of home runs at home. I'm not sure how much I want to bet on, you know, Will Benson having figured anything out. I don't know. I mean, there's not like any big gain in his chase rate. There's a little bit of a gain in his swinging strike rate, but it's still not as good as it was during his good season a couple of years ago. His contact rate is way up, both in and out of the zone, which you would think over time would lead to a lower swing strike rate, but he's also swinging more. So yeah, that's what's happening there. But his CSW against is down. It's not something we talk about for hitters a lot. We talk about it more for pitchers, but you know, it works for pitchers because called strikes and whiffs are the way you get strikes, and strikes are good for pitchers and bad for hitters. His CSW is down, which means that, you know, when the ball's in the zone, he's hitting it. He's not taking a lot of called strikes, even though the swing strike rate hasn't come down very much. But if he's able to maintain these contact gains and maybe just dial back the swing rate a little bit, it could get even better, perhaps. Although really, he's not chasing more than he has before, so maybe that's not even true. I don't know. I don't know what to make of any of this. It's way too early to make much of it. Benson, though, does strike me as the kind of guy who, his good season 2 years ago was 108 games, and he had 11 home runs and 19 stolen bases, which puts you on like a, I don't know, a 16-25 type pace. Last year in 128 games, he went 14-16, but it was with really bad rates, a 187 average, 274 on base. If he's able to get that high BABIP again and maybe reduce the strikeouts like he's showing he's done a little bit this year, even just getting that strikeout rate back to where it was 2 years ago instead of the 39.7% last year, like he could easily have a 15-20 type season if he gets regular playing time. And the challenge, this is, you know, we talk about this sometimes on the show, but like the challenge with a guy like Will Benson is it's very easy to look at him right now and be like, he's still striking out almost 30% of the time. We've seen this before. It can't continue. And that might be true. But if you don't take that bet now, you won't get to. Right? It's or it'll cost you a lot, right? In 3 weeks, if he's still doing this, 2 weeks, if he's still doing this, it's too late. You're either going to pay a ton for him or he's already going to be picked up. I think I'm probably going to poke around in my deeper leagues at picking up Will Benson and seeing where this goes. Because like I said, if you did that in 2023, it basically went all year, right? He ended that season in 329 plate appearances with a 275 average. And like I said, 11 home runs and 19 stolen bases. He also scored 51 runs, drove in 31 that year. That's a pretty solid season for a part-time player. And he also, I mean, he's a platoon guy, but he's the large side of the platoon. I think if you want to take a bet on him in your deeper leagues, I wouldn't blame you. I probably will in some cases where I really need the help. And see where this goes.
Yeah, I think you have to take the chance based on just how hot he is. And because even if he does cool off, we've seen his hot streaks before and they can be scorching hot like they are right now. So if you still have the ability to get in on it before it possibly does cool down, I think you just have to do that. Hey, he'll have a big test coming up. Three of their next four series are all on the road. He's done all of this damage at home. He hasn't done anything on the road yet. They're just 11 plate appearances, but yeah. At the same time, he hasn't. He's, you know, 1-for-11 on the road with a double. All five homers obviously coming at home. So it's so many away games. It'd be interesting to see how that goes away from Great American. But yeah, I mean, you just ride it out. Like, I guess if he goes up for auction now, he could end up costing you something. But if you've already picked him up, you're not dropping him. You're not going to be able to get anything for him in trade. You're just going to be able to ride out this hot streak. I do think the Reds are, on one hand, they have so much depth when all these guys come back, like when Jamer Candelario comes back, when Christian Encarnacion Strand, and so on and so forth. There's two or three other guys that are out right now. But they're also like kind of begging for people to take these roles. They've disappointed. So if Benson's hitting, he's going to play, especially as a lefty. And if you're not going to get in now, you're just never going to get in. So might as well get in.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at their you know, injury situation and what's going on, the guy who could, because like most of those guys you mentioned who are hurt, like Encarnacion Strand is either going to DH or play first base. Spencer Steer's days in the outfield seem to be numbered, and so, you know, maybe they move Gavin Lux back to an outfield spot, but he's not doing so well that if Benson's hitting, there's no guarantee that Lux will displace him. Candelario is sort of in the same boat. It's really Jake Fraley. Like, he's the left-handed outfielder who's on the shelf right now, who, if he comes back, like, he's not displacing Friedel in center field. I don't think, I mean, who's in left? Austin Hayes has been either in left or DH. I guess he could be the, you know, they could push Hayes to a platoon role, but he's been so good. So Fraley is the one who could displace Benson again. But I think if Benson stays hot, he's not going to get benched until he stops being hot. I think that's what it comes down to. So I'm actually going to do something a little atypical here, and I'm going to extend our head-to-head heroes by two players, because there's a couple of names of guys that I almost picked that I want to talk about because I think they're interesting.
Sure.
The first one, let's do it. I'm going to change the order. I was going to talk about this guy first, but I'm going to save him because he's a good segue into our other topic for the show. Let's talk about Josh Jung. So Josh Jung had a good week. Hit, I think, 3 home runs this week. I already closed my page. I was looking at that. I'm looking at his page now. But he, you know, nothing special today, just 1-for-4 with a strikeout. But he is now at a 347 WOBA on the season. He is, through 149 plate appearances, striking out 20.8% of the time, which is both, I mean, just, it's good, right? It's not Louis, you know, Arise, Kwan good, but it's good. But it's also a big improvement for a guy who, as a rookie, struck out, or in his debut, really, not so much a, yeah, yeah, his first season, which wasn't his full rookie season, but his first season, he had a 38.2% strikeout rate in 102 plate appearances. Then he had his full rookie season and got that down to 29.3%. Last year, it was down to 25.5. This year, it's down to 20.7 or 20.8, which is a big improvement. But he's also brought his barrel rate up to 13% going into the day today. And, you know, that ability to barrel more while striking out less, like, that's it. That's what you want to see hitters doing. And Jung was a guy who, like, when Josh Jung was a prospect, people were super excited about him. Like, he was a big time power prospect back in the day. You know, if I go look at his prospect report on his Fangraphs page, where they show you the grades he had when he graduated, he was a 60-60 raw power. So he had a 60 raw power, and he was a 50 with the possibility of 60 game power. Like, that's a big power bat. And he's never really put it all together. And through, you know, almost 150 plate appearances, that's what he's doing right now, right? He's on a close to 30 home run pace. If you look at a, you know, 600 plate appearance season, he's getting real close to a 30 home run pace. He's hitting 283. He's getting on base at a 282, and he's getting on base at a 315 clip, which isn't great, but with that kind of slugging and that kind of batting average, it'll play. You'd like to see him drawing more walks. He's only at a 4.7% walk rate, but, like, it feels like it's a little bit nitpicky given the season he's having so far. And I don't know. I'm guessing at this point that I've just missed out on the Josh Jung breakout. If that's what this is, that, like, he's not available anywhere, I don't think. I'll have to check around on that, but, man, he's been good.
He definitely has been. I'm a little more hesitant to hype it up necessarily as a breakout. The strikeout improvement is really great. Like, that, we needed to see that, especially after his first two seasons. I'm still worried about the health. I think he's already spent time on the IL this year with an injury. And I don't mean to pile on the guy. I know some of it has been a little fluky, some of the injuries, but, like, he has not been able to stay in the field. And I just, like, it just feels like he is currently, based on the numbers, it looks like he's kind of, like, maximizing what he can do. Like, the average exit velocity is so low, which is not, like, unforeseen in his career. His average exit velocity was actually less last year. It really makes that 2023 kind of look like a standout outlier kind of thing. And so he's not hitting the ball very hard. It just seems like when he is making contact, he's at least lifting it. But even when you look at, like, He doesn't really pull it and lift it that much. Like for him, he's at 14.8% this year pulled in the air. And like, that's up from last year, but it's kind of around his career average, and it's not that high relative to the rest of the league. A matter of fact, it's like 2 percentage points lower. So like, I'm with you. This is a guy who had a lot of upside. He's still just 27 years old. I'd like to see it come together. It's going to start getting a lot hotter in Texas. The ball's going to start flying a lot more. But it does look like on the surface here, or I guess not on the surface, it looks like under the hood, he's kind of maximizing what he's capable of doing. And until I start seeing him hitting the ball harder, it's hard for me to buy too much into the barrel rate and the improvements in the strikeout rate, because unless that's also coming with more walks, which you identified, it's not. And for most of our listeners, walks might not matter as much depending on what you're playing in, but I'd still like to see it. It just kind of feels like the bottom could fall out a little bit here.
Yeah. And I think it is worth noting that, you know, every time I look at bat speed data, I'm like, I don't really know what any of this means yet. Like, I still feel like we're still figuring it out. But his average bat speed is down, lower than it was either the last 2 years. His fast swing rate is down to 5.6%, which is real low. I don't, like I said, we're still learning what all of this means, but I know that's not good. And even things like his squared up rate, is not better. It's down as a percentage of contact, although up as a percentage of swing, which makes sense because he's striking out less. What he is doing is his blasts are up. Now, blasts are when you square up a ball with a fast swing, basically, right? When you both swing hard and hit it cleanly is what it comes down to. And I think that sort of gets to your point of what Young is doing is he's maximizing what little he has to work with, if that makes sense. Like, he isn't swinging that fast that often, and he's not hitting the ball hard very often, which is related to not swinging that fast that often. But when Josh Young does swing fast, he also makes good contact. It seems to be the case. Like, when he gets off his A swing, he's getting results from it. And I don't know. Does he, over the next couple months, get that swing off more often, or does he settle into it not being any more successful than it has been before, and he doesn't get it off any more often than he is right now, and things start to fall off? I don't know. I think with a guy like this, I'm inclined to lean on the pedigree a little bit right now and want to believe in what we're seeing. He's also a good fielder, which will keep him on the field, so that helps. But yeah, I mean, if you go look at his Statcast sliders, like, the average exit velocity is real blue, 17th percentile. The hard hit rate is 32nd percentile. The bat speed is 28th percentile. So like, he's sort of getting the results, the barrel rate and the sweet spot and the X slugging and all of that kind of stuff, even the X woba. Like, he's getting those results without the inputs necessarily being that good. And so this is, you know, when I say results, it's an interesting one, right? Results are both, to me, like, there's the results of what happens, and there's the inputs into that. The inputs into that are things like your XWOBA, your barrel rate. But XWOBA and barrel rate, like hard hit rate, is an input into those things, right? And so that's where I'm saying, like, usually you see a high barrel rate supported by a high hard hit rate, and he's not doing that. What he is doing is getting a really high sweet spot rate, which is, sweet spot is like hitting it the ideal launch angles. And so maybe that's how he's making this all work. Like, maybe for Young, this is a case of like, he's, when he does make contact, it's in those ideal launch angles. And so even though he doesn't make hard contact that often, when he does, it's still in those ideal launch angles. And so they turn into barrels at a high rate. I don't know. That leads me to want to like do a bunch of research that I probably won't do, but maybe, into like, how often does a sweet spot contact turn into a barrel, and how often does a hard hit contact turn into a barrel? Because you would think that for most hitters, you could take their sweet spot rate and their hard hit rate and predict their barrel rate. And it feels to me like Young's barrel rate is higher than I would predict from those two things, because the hard hit rate isn't that good, but I don't actually know.
Yeah. And like the, you know, you brought up the, obviously a lot of that was about the exit velocity. And I think what would make me feel better about the exit velocity is if in the past it was a lot harder and a lot higher, because then I'd say, okay, well, this looks like potentially a guy who's sacrificing some bat speed and sacrificing some exit velocity to strike out less. And so he's working. And right now the results are good and he's working towards something, and maybe he finds that sweet spot, no pun intended, in between those things. But the drop in strikeout rate, which is good, we're going to take that, has just resulted in a continuation of poor exit velocity. So like, I don't know. I don't know how much he's really adjusting his swing or anything like that in order to cut down that strikeout rate, or if he's just kind of been a little bit lucky so far. I don't know. But I would kind of view him as a sell high if you got people that believe in him. But I also agree with the idea of like, this was a guy with pedigree who hasn't really had a chance to flourish because of injuries. So maybe it's kind of all coming together late. I don't know. I'm leaning towards a sell high though.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I got one more guy who's going to help lead us into a broader conversation. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here. We're doing our extended head-to-head heroes. And what we're going to talk about in a moment are some trades that have happened in our leagues, a couple that I've made, a couple that some other people have made, and we'll discuss sort of what we think of those. We're getting into the heat of trade season, and so it's really a good time to look at like what trades are happening and how do we think about those and how should you be thinking about trades in your leagues. I almost traded for a guy who had a great week this week again, because he's been having great weeks every week, and that's Pete Crow Armstrong. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick, because this conversation started with the other manager being interested in Mookie Betts, who we're going to talk about later, because I actually did end up trading Mookie Betts. And we started off in a conversation about a Betts versus PCA framework that blew up from there before the manager finally said, I don't know if I'm really ready to get to compete this year. So I don't know if Betts for PCA makes sense, but I would trade PCA for someone else if we went more youth. And we ended up in a situation where he was asking for, he was offering me Pete Crow Armstrong along with Brady House, Moises Ballesteros, and Zach Gallen, plus a second round draft pick for Noah Schultz, Shane Baz, Emil Morales, Lazaro Montez. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. Travis Bazana and a fifth round pick. So this is like Baz, who's already, you know, he's been up and down this year. It hasn't been all great, but it's like a good, young, high upside starting pitcher still. Two truly near the top of the game prospects in Schultz and Bazana. And then Morales and Montez are two prospects who are like, you know, going to be among the top prospects in baseball probably within the next few months, if not the next year. Basically for PCA, Gallen and a couple of less exciting prospects. Ballesteros, I guess, is interesting and more interesting, and maybe I should rate him more highly. He ended up then deciding this didn't really work. He just wanted to keep PCA, which I get. I was actually going back and forth and trying to get Bazana out of that deal. There was a whole bunch of talk around that. But point is, I was getting close to trading for PCA. I was doing that because I had a team that needed steals. And the thing I felt about PCA, and I think the thing that kept us from coming to a deal, was I have real concerns about the sustainability of what Pete Crow Armstrong is doing right now. But he's so good defensively and he is so fast that I think his floor is stealing a ton of bases with a good average and scoring a lot of runs. Because he's not going to lose his job. There's at this point, like, there's probably literally nothing he could do to lose his job this year or in the foreseeable future. He's so good defensively. He's clearly a table setter for them, if nothing else. But you can't trade him as a stolen base and batting average guy, because right now he's like, you know, one of the best power hitters in baseball, I guess, somehow, right? He's at 12 home runs, unless he hit one today that I missed. No, today he just had a double and a triple and two runs. That's all. I mean, this guy is just on, like, I always feel like anytime you say a guy's on a heater, everyone's like, it seems dismissive. So I'm not saying this to be dismissive of PCA, but like he is on a heater right now. This guy is just hitting everything. However, if you pull up a leaderboard of some plate discipline statistics, and I'm looking at the Sports Info Solution plate discipline just because they have a swing strike rate that I want to look at on Fangraphs. I'm looking at all hitters, all qualified hitters. There's 164 of them. In chase rate, O swing, Pete Crow Armstrong is second in baseball in terms of most chase, behind Lenin Sosa, who is, you know, not good. The guys behind him, like the next few guys on this list, are Yainer Diaz, who's been struggling a bit, Salvador Perez, who has been, you know, swinging wildly for years. That's just what he does. Sedana Rafaela, who I don't think is a good hitter. Jackson Churio, who's been struggling this year. Adolis Garcia, who's been struggling this year. Gabriel Arias, who was on a little bit of a heater himself, but has cooled off and doesn't look real good. Kerry Carpenter, not having his best year so far. Michael Harris II hasn't really blossomed the way we hoped. Like, this is a long list of guys who, they're not all bad hitters. They're not terrible by any means, but like that level of chase rate isn't great. And even by the time we get down to like Arias, Carpenter, Harris, like PCA is, his chase rate is 48.3%. Arias is 43.3%. Adolis Garcia is 43.6%. Like he is chasing a lot more than even other guys in the top 10. Then if I go look at swinging strike rate, he's not quite as bad there, but he's 15th in baseball in swinging strike rate. Now swinging strike rate does have some guys who have been more successful. If I look through the top of that list, Arias, who I just talked about, Kyle Stowers, who's having a great start to the year, is a high, second highest swing strike rate. Brandon Lau, who's been sort of up and down. Bryce Harper, who is Bryce Harper. Julio Rodriguez, who we know what he's capable of, but really hasn't been what we hoped this year. Byron Buxton is having a great year. Rafaela, who we already talked about. Michael Tolia, Logan Ohapi, Jordan Walker, Brent Rooker, Hunter Goodman, Rafi Devers, and Trevor Story. Those are the 14 guys who are swinging and swing through pitches at a higher rate than Armstrong is. I don't know. I don't know that I'm quite as worried about that stat because there are guys who have been successful with high swing strike rates, but you still have a guy who, like, there's a lot of swing and miss in his game. There's a lot of chase in his game. It seems like the kind of thing that pitchers over time will get better and better at exploiting, but it hasn't happened yet. So like, am I wrong to look at PCA and think like he's got to make some real improvements in his approach to actually sustain anything like what he's doing right now? And let's even get to the point of like, he's not going to sustain what he's doing right now. Right. I get that. He's just been absolutely otherworldly lately. But even to say, you know, I don't know, like he has over the last more than 2 weeks, over the last 16 days, he has a 189 WRC plus. That was going into play today where he had another good game. Like that's like, he's been insane. I know he can't sustain that. I'm not suggesting he can or should, but do you think he can be like a, like even like a 130 WRC plus, a 30% better than league average bat? Is the power really going to sustain? Is the swing and miss going to become less of a problem? And like, again, Max, we talked about this a little bit with Young, but like Max EV on Crow Armstrong is 108.6. His average EV is 89.9. The hard hit rate is okay at 40.9. The barrel rate is good at 13.9. I just feel like he's destined to fall off and fall pretty far. Not so far that I wasn't willing to trade for him in a dynasty league, mind you. But that's again because I think the floor is relatively high. What's the reasonable expectation moving forward? Like, I'm not asking the ceiling because I know that's a hard conversation, but like, can he sustain any of this?
Yeah, he's got a really, really interesting profile. And I think if people looked at his 5x5 numbers, they'd be most suspicious of his power. And I don't think he's going to be a 30 homer guy, even though that's obviously what he's pacing for. But if he continues to pull the ball in the air as much as he has, which is like an absurd number, his pulled air percentage is 26.3%. And we've seen with guys in the past, most notably on this show, certainly Isak Paredes, that like if you do that and if you pull and lift at a high clip, and PCA's like exit velocities and stuff are much better than Paredes, not to make this an apples to oranges comparison here, then like he could get away with some surprising power. However, the chase rate is so bad that you were talking about there. And he doesn't follow that up with like a high walk rate, that I think his strikeout rate is bound to go up. And this isn't like, if you heard his chase rate is up this year, but you also hear that he's on a bender, you might be thinking like, well, no wonder he's chasing. Like it seems like everything he touches is turning into gold. So why wouldn't you chase? He chased just as much last year and was bad last year. So like, this isn't like him just kind of getting full of himself in a good, confident way and swinging at everything because everything seems to work out. Like, it's just a flaw in his game that I think that is going to come back to bite him. And that circles back to the first point I made about his pulled air percentage, because that number is so high because he doesn't hit like any ground balls. And so you combine two things here. Like, he doesn't hit any ground balls, and that his chase rate is just bad. And that's not a fluke. Like, it's been bad. It's going to stay bad. His batting average is going to fall off a cliff. And so I still like him. I don't have him in like almost any leagues, and he has proven me wrong. And just been so hot since the start of the season. Like you said, I don't think the batting average is going to continue. I think you might get a nice surprising year of power, and in a way you already have. I bet a lot of projection systems didn't even have him for 12 home runs, and he's already met that, and it's mid-May. So I think you will get a nice home run total, and there's a chance that it won't continue at this rate, but you'll continue to get some pop out of PCA, and you'll obviously get the speed, and depending on where he continues to hit, you should get the runs. I think the batting average is going to get really bad.
So this is, you mentioned the projections and the power, and this is sort of a fun number. We talk about guys whose projections change as the season goes on, right? It's one of the more interesting ways to look at players. The preseason projections for PCA, and this is, I'm just going to rattle off some numbers, but it's Fangraphs depth charts, Steamer, Zips tied to depth charts, playing time, ATC, the bat X, and Oopsie. Doesn't even matter. Preseason projections for home runs on the year: 17, 13, 16, 18, 14, 13, 15, 15. PCA projections now for rest of season home runs from all those same systems: 16, 16, 15, 16, 14, 18, 18, 15. So basically, they are all they've all shifted enough that they are now saying the rest of the season, he's going to hit as many home runs as they originally thought he would hit. Does that make sense? They all said 15-ish home runs, 15, 16 home runs was his projection. So
they're not buying anything.
No, they are. They're saying he's going to hit 15 more.
Oh, I thought I literally thought you were telling me
total.
That he was going to hit six more home runs at most. I was like,
no. No. That would actually be crazy, because that would mean that they lowered their projections, right? Like,
right.
They're actually saying, we thought that in now part of this also is the preseason projections for him were all around 130 games, and so the projections remaining for him are all around 100 games. But they're still saying in 30 fewer games, about 25% less playing time than we originally thought, he's going to hit the same number of home runs as we originally thought. It's impressive, right? Like he has meaningfully moved expectations for how many home runs he's going to hit going forward. And you can see that in the ISO projections, right? The ISO projections range from 144 to 171. Zips was the only one at 171. They now range from 175 to 195. So yeah, his lowest rest of season ISO projection is higher than his highest preseason projection. So the projections have moved on him meaningfully. However, I don't know that I buy that he's going to hit that many home runs. he strikes me because he's chasing so much. And this is one of the big differences with Paredes. And it's the thing that makes Paredes, and to a lesser extent, like Jose Ramirez is a little bit of this model as well. Those guys have elite plate discipline skills. And so they can sit there and wait for that pitch on the inner half that they can turn on and then crush it when it shows up. The way PCA is swinging right now and chasing as much as he's chasing, I don't know why you wouldn't just throw him garbage away repeatedly. Like, let him try to pull it. That's fine. Pull this slider that just dove out of the zone. Go for it. Right? And now, maybe that's what's happening and he's just doing it. I don't know what to make of what's happening with him. But it feels unsustainable. So I guess my question then for you is, if you had him anywhere, and I don't have him anywhere, and this seems like a crazy thing for me to say, given I was just trying to trade for him, and I was going to buy high. I wasn't quite willing to buy all the way high, which is why I think this deal didn't come together, but I was willing to buy high on Pete Armstrong. But I think if I had him, he's a sell high. Do you agree?
My instincts are to say yes, but it obviously depends on, like, what do we mean by sell high? Like, if I could get a top 15 outfielder for PCA right now, I think I'm doing that trade. I have him in the Podcasters League, and my entire rotation in that league is on the IL. So, like, it may be time for me to sell, but it's a 5x5, so steals are a part of the equation, and I have them for $5. So, like, I don't know if I want to sell high there. Whereas if I still had him in the head-to-head league on Fantrax, the listener league, I don't remember what I did with him. I must have traded him away. But I had him for a last-round pick. That's also 5x5, but it's head-to-head, a little bit different. I think folks that have been listening to the show know I don't value steals as much in that particular format. I think maybe I would be looking to move him. So I think it's something that's format dependent. And I know that's not very helpful for our listeners, but if I could get a top 15 outfielder for PCA, I'm making that trade. I don't think he's a top 15 guy.
All right, let's take another break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some trades I actually made as opposed to the one I, didn't make. All right, welcome back to the Keep or Cut podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. We're about to talk about a couple trades I made. I was going to talk about the smaller one first, but we were talking about PCA and the trade that I ended up making instead of the PCA trade is probably the more interesting one to talk about. So let's talk about that first. And my goodness, there's a bunch of names in this trade to discuss. I'll start off by saying this is also in a dynasty league. It's that same league. I needed speed and I needed pitching. My team is running away with runs, RBIs, and home runs. It's doing well. Near the top, could be in first place at a moment's notice in on base percentage, and is bottom-ish, middle-ish of the pack in stolen bases. Doing well in most of the pitching counting stats, near the bottom in ERA and WHIP. We'll talk about these trades back-to-back, but the first one, it's actually the second trade I made, but it was, as I said, that original PCA conversation started with me shopping Mookie Betts. I have been shopping Betts because, as I said, my offense has been great. He isn't young. His power doesn't seem to be quite as good as it had been in the past. Like, he had a down power year last year. And despite actually not a bad, like, start, remember he hit a home run in Japan or something? No, he missed the Japan games. He had a home run opening, like, real opening day. Stateside opening day, however you want to call it.
Well, it was, everybody was worried that he lost like 20 pounds or something, and that it was, I don't know if you remember that, and then that he kind of quickly put that to bed.
He did. But he's still like, he's got 6 home runs, which is still not even close to the kind of, right? His before last year's 19, he had hit 35 and 39 the 2 years before that. Then the year before that, he had 23. He had 16 in the shortened 2020 season.
Crazy.
He's nowhere near that 39-ish pace. His ISO, even last year, it was a 202. It's down to 152 this year. There are, in my opinion, there are real signs of aging.
Oh, that makes me so sad. Like, we just need to take a moment and appreciate the career of Mookie Betts. I'm not saying that it's over, but like, oh yeah. Man, that makes me sad.
I get it. I love Mookie. So this is not a, I mean, there's a reason I had him. Like, this is not an old dynasty league. This dynasty league's been, I mean, it's old-ish. It's been around five years, something like that. Like, but it's not so old that I got him because nobody had heard of him, blah, blah, blah. Like, I paid up for Mookie in this league. But not to continue harping on this, but his max EV is 107.2. It was 109.4 last year, 110.1 the year before. His average exit velocity, which dipped to 89.9 last year, is 88.6 this year. His barrel rate this year is 2.7%. His hard hit rate is down to 34.5%. Like, everything is trending the wrong way. So this was my, like, his stats haven't been terrible. He hasn't fallen off from being viewed as an elite asset. He might not have even actually fallen off, right? Like, it's only been a part of a season, but this was my decision where I was going to try to sell while I could. And I needed speed. And I specifically needed speed in the outfield. And so the deal I made was I traded away Mookie Betts, Justin Steele. He's hurt. He's done for the year. And Seiya Suzuki. Yeah, more than a year, right? And Seiya Suzuki, who's been excellent. I've been very happy with Suzuki. But as I said, I need speed. So all the stuff Suzuki's good at, I've been great at. And I don't necessarily need. I got Jaron Duran, Tomoyuki Sugano, Bailey Ober, and Bo Bichette. So what I effectively did was I swapped out Seiya for Duran in the outfield and Betts for Bichette at middle infield. And then I added two good pitchers. Ober in particular is a good pitcher. Sugano is a fine pitcher who's putting up good rates right now, and I'll hopefully ride that. Ober is also like, he's under 30. He's relatively low mileage on the arm because he was a little bit of a later breakout. I also, in this deal, traded Suzuki's like 30 or 31. And Betts, as we talked about, is showing these signs of aging. So I swapped out a over 30 outfielder for Duran, who's not as young as we want him to be because he hasn't, you know, the late breakout as well, but he's 27, 28, 27 or 28, something like that, right, maybe 29. There. But he's under 30. And I swapped Betts for Bichette, who is, you know, 25, 26. Bichette's actually still pretty young. He is. I feel like I should be able to find this. Hold on.
He's 27.
That still counts as actually still young. So I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
And as part of this, Bichette, let's see. He had a hit and a walk, a couple strikeouts today. But Bichette has dropped his strikeout rate way down from where it was last couple of years. Actually, for his career, it'd be a career best strikeout rate. He's chasing less than he has before. The home run per fly ball rate has rebounded a bit. His average exit velocity at 91.4 is back to where it was 3 and 4 years ago when he was a star. His max EV of 112.3 is around where it was 3 or 4 years ago when he was a star. His barrel rate of 9.5%, he's never really, 2020 is the only season he was over 10%. So 9.5% is basically back to peak for him. The 49.4% hard hit rate is, again, almost peak for him. He has a 339 WOBA and a 376 ex-WOBA. So I made this deal because I needed the speed, and Duran will at the very least provide that. We've seen from last year that Duran can be a truly elite producer, even beyond the speed. And Bichette, I mean, he's pacing for like, he's pacing in a way that could push 2020. And his underlying numbers suggest he's been better than his surface stats have been. And even the average is good. The on-base percentage is an OBP league, but the OBP is good. I think that I felt like I was buying low on Bichette and maybe on Duran, although I think it's sort of hard to buy low on Duran. His value is still pretty high, even though the start of the season hasn't looked exactly like last year. And I think I was getting out of Betts at the right time. Giving up Seiya at some level hurt more because I just don't think I got as much value for him, and he's been really good, but he wasn't a need for me.
Say is also a guy that has also had some trouble staying on the field. Not that that's necessarily worth bringing up right now, but it is a reality in his case. I think Mookie and Saya for Bichette and Duran is a pretty fair trade. And then when you factor in that it's a dynasty league, I much prefer the Bichette and Duran side.
And I got two pitchers.
Yeah. Well, I also
got a draft pick upgrade.
the draft pick upgrade's nice. And Sagano, sure. But I would have traded Justin Steele for Bailey Ober before his injury. I would definitely do it after Tommy John surgery.
I wouldn't have before.
Really?
So this Steele more than Ober? I really like Justin Steele. I'm a big Steele fan. Okay. I shouldn't say I'm not a fan of his now. In our present world where he's had Tommy John surgery and is out for a year plus,
yeah, obviously.
Fine. And the way this came together was we talked about Betts and Duran as the starting point. We agreed that I should get more than just Duran, which I was glad to agree to. And then we had to figure out what that more was. And we got to a point where I was like, man, I really could use some pitching, and I could use a replacement. And then he wanted Saya, and I was like, well, if you were talking Saya, Bichette has to be in the deal. I'm not doing this deal without getting, like, if I'm giving up that outfielder, I need to actually replace my shortstop at least. And so then we got into like, it needs to, with those two there, it needs to be Bichette and Ober with Duran if you're getting Betts and Saya. And then he came back and said, I don't really know what my plan with him would be, but if we're trying to like level this out, if I wanted you to put Steele in, what would it take to get us over the top? And that was how Sugano and the draft pick stuff got sort of thrown in at the end. Right. And this isn't to say, by the way, when I sort of got to this, like, say a bet for Ober, Bichette, Duran, that wasn't me saying that's fair. That was because I think I got a good deal in the end here anyways, but I thought I was getting too much and we would need to balance that out somehow. And this was throwing Steele, and I was like, okay, what about Sugano, who he had already suggested he was sort of fine moving Sugano, and that's how we ended up here. But yeah, I mean, the way I looked at this in the big picture was obviously from a lineup perspective, Duran replaces Saya, Bichette replaces Betts, but from a dynasty value perspective, I looked at it as turning Betts, who I think is still a top 20, top 25-ish, maybe top 30 dynasty piece. I turned him into Duran, who I also think is around that range as a dynasty piece. I turned Saya into Ober, who I think are relatively similar dynasty values overall. Although I think I do prefer Saya because I prefer Saya because he is not a pitcher. And in dynasty, maybe that's why my pitching hasn't been good. But I, you know, there's just more risk with pitchers as always. And then I basically turned Steele into Bichette, where they're both sort of reclamation projects of a sort. The difference is that Bichette's a reclamation project who is back and making good on his reclamation, whereas Steele, the project just started. So, and then I got Sugano in the mix.
And I feel like the Bichette thing could be such a steal. He was a guy who, like, I never wanted to be out on because it just, everything about last season just felt like a fluke to me. And like, I mean, just it sounds stupid because it's such a simple statistic, but like, just look at his batting average by year. 2019, 311, 2020, 301, 2021, 298, 2022, 290, 2023, 306. And then we get this 225, and it just felt like he's 26 Something's years old. So you're expecting the opposite, you know? And I think that's part of why it hit so hard, was like, this is going to be a massive season for Bo Bichette. Like, it's all going to come together. And then it was such the opposite that, like, I think that was part of it, but like, it would have been really, really weird for this guy to just become a bad player. And that's kind of how he was getting drafted, like outside of the top 100. Yeah. and it just felt weird. And it kind of feels like it's somehow like we should have now accepted a month and a half into the season, like, oh, Bobichet's back, he's a stud. And in this deal, it still doesn't feel like we've accepted that. And that's part of the reason why I like it so much for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think the overall line is good, but he's only hit four home runs and he's only stolen four bases. Now, those are not bad numbers, but we're a quarter of the way into the season, a little more than a quarter of the way into the season. So I think I said before that he was pacing towards 2020. That's not really accurate. He's really pacing more towards, boy, over 600 plate appearances. He's pacing towards 12-12.
It's more the underlying stuff, though. Like the barrel rate is like right back to where it was the rest of his career. Like last year, the barrel rate was 4.4. The lowest he's ever had was 8.8. That was his rookie season. Otherwise, it was almost always exactly like 9.6. Right now, he's at 9.5. The average exit velocity, never below 90 miles an hour, 90.2 miles an hour, other than his second year was 89.2. Last year, it was 89.2. Now it's up to 91.4. It just feels like, I don't know if he had bad SpaghettiOs before every game last year or something, but whatever he abandoned from last year, like he's back. So I don't know if he's better than he was before, and he might not produce the same surface level numbers depending on how the luck kind of breaks. And obviously so far this year, based on his underlying numbers, maybe he has been a little bit unlucky. I'd have to look more into that, but like the player feels back. And so if you liked him before last year, I feel like you should like him again.
I'm with you, and I have him in multiple leagues now, and I've been very happy to see where things are headed. I feel good about this. I also, the other thing that helps me in this league is that my middle infield, in addition to Mookie being my shortstop, I also had Francisco Lindor, who's another over 30 shortstop. And then I've got Jackson Holliday, I've got Andrés Giménez on the IL, and I've got Brett Beatty, who I picked up recently. And between those guys, what I have is a bunch of second basemen. And Giménez, because of my need for speed, is super valuable to me in this league when he gets back. But like Holliday, Giménez, and maybe Beatty turns into something for me, we'll see. But Holliday, Giménez is a really good, really long-term solution at second base. Mm-hmm. But I had these two very good, mind you, but two very, very good, but old shortstop at some level. Now, I'm not looking to sell Lindor anytime soon, but turning Betts into a younger shortstop gives me a future at shortstop that I feel much better about. And now I can really, like, as I look forward, like, I don't really need to do much at middle infield, right? Holliday, Giménez, maybe Beatty, Lindor, and Bichette. That works. That plays at middle infield for the foreseeable future. And the foreseeable future in this case is long enough that I can just sort of wait out a Lindor decline. And if I start to see signs of decline, I may try to ship him off, like similar to what I did with Betts, but I don't have to, because if he really falls off a cliff and really is just useless to me, I'll just slap Bichette in and I'll be fine. And so I feel really good about that from a roster planning perspective.
I like it. Cool. And I think we might be in the middle of a Jackson Holliday breakout here.
I don't know. I don't
want to jinx it, but
I traded a lot for him preseason. I gave up a lot for him because I really believe in the breakout coming, and I'm hopeful it's there. Let's take one more look at one more trade. The first trade I made in the same league where I said I needed pitching. I needed pitching rates specifically. Doing okay on the counting stats, needed rates specifically. I traded Kerry Carpenter, similar boat to Seiya for me, not as valuable as Seiya, clearly, but similar boat to Seiya for me, where he does a lot of really good things, but the things he does well are the things I didn't need. So he had been glued to my bench. And I love Kerry Carpenter. People who know me I'm a huge Kerry Carpenter fan. So, but he'd been glued to my bench because he wasn't doing the things I needed him to do. I needed my outfielders to do in this league. I traded Carpenter and Adael Amador, who has struggled. I still believe in Amador. I think the talent is still legit.
So young.
What?
So young.
Yeah, he's super young. But we just talked about my young second baseman in Holliday and Giménez and maybe Beatty and like... So these guys were excess to me, basically. I traded them for Corbin Burns. That trade started as a conversation about Cole Reagans. And I thought we had basically come to terms on Reagans. And then the guy came back and was like, I just can't trade Reagans right now. And I was like, I get it. And then we made this Burns trade. And then Reagans hit the IL, right?
Yes.
Groin strain. So I super dodged a bullet on that one. But this is another one where I, from a dynasty perspective, I don't know how long Burns is going to be valuable. He's been so good, but he feels like he's teetering, if that makes sense. Like, he's still excellent. I picked him up because I need rates, and he's going to he is going to give me, I'm confident, good ERA and good whip moving forward. But he does feel like he is on the verge where every offseason now I'm going to be like, is this the year? How much can I really count on him? Do I consider him an ace, or is he just a guy in my rotation? Like, and I think the good thing is he's a good enough pitcher that when he loses that ace ability, I still think Burns will be someone you're happy to have in your rotation, right? There's some guys who, like, they go from being an ace to, like, they lose a mile per hour and now they're bad, right? And that is the thing you worry about. I'm not as worried about that with Burns. I think he'll age gracefully in terms of sort of transitioning into being like a low strikeout, maybe 4 ERA kind of guy, because he can still pitch really well and get stuff done. And, you know, maybe this isn't like an unfair comp, but like, does he turn into like Martin Perez, right? Like not like tomorrow, but like, is that like, does he age into being that instead of aging into like, he gets cut everywhere and he's just bad now? Does that make sense?
Look, you said you dodged a bullet because Reagans ended up on the IL. I still think you win this trade, even if you got Cole Reagans. And I like Kerry Carpenter too. And based on everything he's done this year, like, you were 100%
this was
right
not
on.
The deal for Reagan. It was the same manager. The deal for Reagan, a very different looking deal.
Okay.
I agree. I would trade Carpenter and Amador for an injured Cole Reagans in a heartbeat. That I would. That wasn't the deal that was going to happen.
Okay. That's totally fair. I still feel like this is selling. I realize Burns wasn't quite himself last year either, even though he was once again very good. And we're all wondering, like, what the heck happened to the strikeouts. Like, I want to remind people that Corbin Burns had a 2.92 ERA last year, and he has a 2.56 ERA this year. Okay, so like, ERA is not the end-all be-all, and the strikeouts are not there. And clearly, whatever version of Corbin Burns we're dealing with right now is not the Corbin Burns that was the consensus number one pitcher in fantasy, even ahead of Gerrit Cole. Like, it's not the same guy, and that's fine. It's still Corbin Burns, and like, I feel like he's still worthy of that title of fantasy ace until the ERA kind of falls with this drop-off in strikeouts. And he still had, like, occasional games where, like, the strikeouts do come back, so, like, is he figuring it out, or he struck out 10 in his last outing. Now, granted, it's the Rockies on the road, so that really just doesn't count. Like, Merrill Kelly struck out 11 of them today. I could probably strike out 9. Like, that's really not a big deal, but it's still good to see it because we're looking for it. And I don't know, man. I just have a hard time with, as much as I like Kerry Carpenter and as much as I see what you and many people are saying about Corbin Burns, about like, he's kind of losing that ace thing. The dude does not even turn 31 until October. And he's been so good for so long. I just feel like this is a slam dunk deal for you. Like, I would.
Yeah,
have
I mean, once we got to this, it did not take me long to agree to it. I was what kept me away from it was trying to work out the Reagans deal, and like the Reagans deal, like he was asking for a lot of similar players, but there were other names in the mix, there were other prospects in the mix, and he was effectively demanding my first round pick. Now, this league, we're not allowed to pick up minor leaguers in this league. Well, you can pick them up as soon as they get promoted, but your minor league system is basically built through the draft, which both increases the value of the draft pick because you have no other way of building a minor league system, but also means that like Christian Campbell was available in the draft this year. So it wasn't just first year player draft, go get Bizana, Caglianone, Kurtz. Like, it wasn't Burns, it wasn't just those guys. So the first round in that draft is deep, and then it falls off, right? And you're very quickly into the like, so like you basically have, depending on the year, most to all of the first round, maybe even into early second round, a bunch of like guys who are like top 100 dynasty pieces, not just top 100 prospects, right? You have like truly elite prospects available at the top of that draft. And then it falls off quite a bit. And so when he was talking about my first round pick, that isn't just like, oh, why don't you throw in a draft pick? Like if he had asked for my fourth round pick, I'd have been like, okay, I could probably part with a fourth round pick. That seems reasonable. But like a first round pick in this league is so valuable. And so like the Reagans deal was a different deal, and I was trying to get it done. And it just didn't happen. And when it didn't happen, it was like, well, okay, fine. I'll take this Burns deal. And when he agreed to this Burns deal in principle, I was like, okay, fine, this works. Like I'm not going to keep debating this. I'm not going to keep trying to get Reagans out of this. I'm going to take Burns here and be happy because I like this deal. And so, yeah, the dodging a bullet, I was going to pay for Reagans. And the only reason I say I dodged a bullet is like, I really need that ERA boost now. And like, it would have sucked to have like picked him up, not gotten a start out of him, immediately put him on the IL. And like, I don't know, a groin strain, you start to work. Like this is like a re-injury of a groin strain, right? Like he like tweaked something. So like you just, now again, if this manager comes back and is like, hey, he's injured, the price on him is down 20%. I'm going to make that deal. I'm going to go get him. I'm not down on, yes. Cole Reagans. I feel like the price I paid for Burns versus paying the price I would have had to pay for Reagans plus his injury, like I ended up in a much better place. But yeah, the net of all of this is,
yeah,
I basically swapped out Seiya and Carpenter for Duran in the outfield. I swapped out Betts for Bichette in my middle infield. I guess Betts and Amador at some level for Bichette, but then I added Corbin Burns, Bailey Ober, and Tomoyuki Sugano to my rotation. And actually the biggest challenge I'm having now is we don't have super deep benches in this league. And so I actually have to figure out which of my pitchers I'm getting rid of. And for now, what I've done is I had Brian King, who's been excellent for me. He's eligible to be in a minor spot. And so I've actually dropped him to the minors temporarily because I just needed to figure out, like, I don't have my rotation now is Shane Baz, who I'm in the middle of trade talks about. So I may be trading him soon. Colin Rea, who I don't know if he's good, but he's keeps pitching well. So sure.
He's a great American this week. Big test.
Framber, Sugano, Burns, Gausman, maybe Gausman's a cut. I don't know. Tyler McGill, Bailey Ober, and Joe Ryan. So like McGill, like this is, I mean, it's a huge shift from where I was a couple of weeks ago. Cause I dropped some guys who were underperforming and I added these three guys. I do have Shane Bieber and Kumar Rocker on the IL. And so Bieber in particular at some point could come back and make a huge difference. But I am in the process of trying to trade Shane Baz for minor leaguers, just to like help reload my farm a little bit and clear up a roster spot, because I need to clear up a roster spot. I also, for what it's worth, I have Yariel Rodriguez on this roster, and he's the cut if I have to make a cut, but I have him there because saves plus holds is a category. And so relievers who qualify at starting pitcher are pretty valuable as I'm trying to catch up in saves and holds, or keep, you know, stay near the top in saves and holds. And so I've got some stuff to figure out with this group, but hopefully I'll get there. All right. Well, thank you. Yeah, it's a good problem.
Looks promising.
And given where I was a week ago, where my problem was, oh my God, who is pitching for me? I'm much happier now. Yeah.
Very different. So
anyways, thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed hearing about these trades. I hope that they were informative conversations and not just me talking about trades I made. But yeah, if you got questions or comments for us, you can hit us up. You can find me on Blue Sky @Chad Young. Pete, are you on anything anymore? Or are you just lost to the world? off the grid.
I'm off the grid, man. I mean, I technically still have a Twitter, but so you should look for it.
That's
you'll find me here weekly. Monday.
Otherwise, you can find me on Blue Sky. You can find me on. You can find either of us on the Pitcherless Discord if you're on there. You can find me on the Auto News Slack. So lots of places you can try to send us questions, send us feedback, leave ratings and reviews on the show wherever you're listening. That's a big help. But yeah, thanks for listening. We'll be back with you next week.